Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night to you and all that kind of stuff. It's Thursday, the 12th of October, 2023. This is Paul English Live here on the World Broadcasting Network at WBN324.com. And in tonight's little soiree, we're going to be looking at the Middle East. I think that's what it's called, both now and possibly in the past. We'll also be looking at electric vehicles as they burn up and fly towards the horizon all over the place. You'll never go to Luton Airport ever again. And not that I think I'm going to bring anything particularly new to your ears with regard to what's been happening the last week or so, but have to cover it this week because next week it'll all be different, won't it? Welcome back. Welcome back to Paul English Live at our new time really on our new location, I guess, our primary location, which is the World Broadcasting Network, WBN324.com or .zil. We'll be saying a bit more about that a little bit later, but it's great to be here. Last week, if you were tuning in, the second half of the show was picked up by WBN, but we've adjusted the time. To make everyone happy, not least of whom is me. I'm slightly happier. And actually, the slightly later start time has worked a little bit better because I got to go out for a little walk just before the show started in the gloom of the October evening and talked to a couple of my neighbours because they see me quite regularly walking around and they're all quite chatty around here, which is quite good. Nothing heavy. We're just talking about really the weather because that's what the English do. Being English, I talk about it too, you know, so that's kind of what we're up to. I just met, I think it was Deirdre, I didn't know her name. I know all these people by sight, but I don't know their names, and then I try and keep a record of it, and bumble around, and I got one right. There was a guy called Nick the other day, and I got his name right. I was quite chuffed about that. So I don't know if you're a bit bumbly with names, but I am, and it's not, I don't think it's to do with middle years. I think it's to do with the fact that my hard drive is completely full of names. And if I remember this person's, another one's going to get pushed out the back end and I won't know who I'm talking to. So there we go. Anyway, we've had obviously a more peaceable time of things here. Wherever you are in the world, I'm assuming it's autumn with you. Well, it's certainly autumn with us here. And by golly, the nights have drawn in quick, fast. It's suddenly, I'm putting electric lights on at 10 to 6, although, of course, I do work in a very dark, gloomy pit where the studio is, because, you know, that's the sort of thing that we do. But, yeah, the nights have been drawing in quick, as I was remarking to my neighbour, of course, being English, we talk about the weather. I could probably do 2 hours on the weather, I suppose, which I'm sure you'd all be quite thrilled about, really. Probably not. Anyway, in terms of events in the world, there's been a few, hasn't there? It's been a bit bit eventful the last week. Although it's a new sort of an event, it's actually an old type of event, because whenever these colossally dramatic things happen, whenever there's a lot of death around, whenever there is theatre of a huge scale, it doesn't mean that the events are not happening or that they're not awful, but it generally means that the reporting from the mainstream media is to be taken with several pinches of salt, and also with a long pause before you comment. I don't have any profoundly deep and insightful comments to make other than ones I would have probably made with regards to other events in the past, like 9/11 and this, that and the other. But I have a little rule of thumb, which is I wait at least 3 days to see what actually happens to me as it goes on, because the first shock of these things, and they're always a shock, it doesn't matter who you are, because it's unpleasant. We don't like unpleasantness in the world. The first shock of it always, you know, tends to hijack your emotions. And if you've been tuning in over the past couple of weeks, one of the little threads I've got running, although I don't know whether we'll even get time to cover it today, although I've got a little bit lined up, has been the French Revolution. And it's not really about the French Revolution. I mean, of course, it is about the French Revolution. But what I'm particularly interested in, what I want to sort of talk about, what I'm trying to put out there, is this desperate madness that overcomes crowds, and how we have all been gaslit. And of course, recently, over the past few years, the great gaslighting has been the COVID debacle, with so-called authoritative information being pushed out by so-called authoritative sources, i.e. government spokespeople, that turned out to be complete baloney, and which many of us knew was baloney from the minute they started opening their yaps. And realistically, we've got a similar situation going on here. This does not mean that people have not died, although I wouldn't put anything beyond anybody at the moment. I don't trust the mainstream media at all, frankly. Why should we? The thing about it is that you are challenged all the time with trying to find that little bit of kernel of truth that they throw in there, because they do have to do some of that. And you might think that my view is completely cynical and barking mad, but it's really just based on 15 or 20 years of watching what they do consciously. Prior to that, I was as unconscious probably as everybody else, you know, just absorbing this is bad and that's awful. And people that were around for 9/11 will know, I think, will probably recall that at the when it actually happened on the morning, everybody wasn't enlightened and understood things. You were just overwhelmed by the display of imagery and the appallingness of the whole event. It hijacks the emotions and it puts you in a condition where you can't really think rationally, I guess, unless you've been trained militarily. And most of us haven't. Military personnel, of course, are trained to be able to keep their emotions in check so that they can continue to make sound decisions whilst under fire or whilst in very unpleasant and hellish conditions. And Joe Public, of which, you know, I've been part of Joe Public, and probably no doubt you too, are not. We're not trained in those sorts of things. So I've picked out a couple of little articles. I'm not intending to go through the whole of them. There was a very long one by Michael Hoffman, which got reposted to uns.com recently. When I say long, I do mean long. It's about 3,000 words, so I'm not intending to read the whole thing, but the headline's quite interesting because it's about looking at certain people's reactions to these events, because if you've noticed the reactions that have been taking place, the people coming out and beating the war drums instantaneously, everybody's got to die, that's on the other side, that's in Gaza, that's of Hamas and this, that and the other, and very little clear thinking is taking place. And I was reminded, of course, of the sheer hysterical thinking that was taking place in these events I'd mentioned during the French Revolution. Nothing changes. Human nature goes on and on and on being the same old thing. And it doesn't matter how many sort of smart devices we have, how many wonderful telephones, how many instant messaging apps. And I'm a sucker for these things. I've loved and really enjoyed tremendously this period, this last sort of 25 years or so, armed with this technology, not because I wanted to go shopping, but because I was able, and no doubt you too, were able to go around and hunt down the sort of pieces of information that you didn't even know existed. And in fact, this sort of conversation is also a conversation that still a huge number of people don't know they could even participate in. What I mean by that is the conversation where we ask questions, the types of questions that we're asking are alien to certain people. Why would you even question that? In fact, it's offensive. I've been involved in some exchanges recently over the past couple of months with people in real life where you see the shutters come down like permanently. This is still the great conundrum with it all, you know. And in fact, I've also got an article. It depends whether I can get around to these things. I realized actually prior to the show that I've got so much material that keeps building up that not only is the work building it all up, but then I've got to get it in the right order. We've got all the words there. We've just got to get them in the right order, and then the play will be fantastic or pretty good. So I might not get them all in the right order because I'm going to hop around a bit here because I am, I guess. I've just got a feeling that I'm going to hop around a bit. But the article, as I said, by Michael Hoffman, let's just look at this one briefly because it's too long to go through the whole thing. It's titled On Palestine, Victor Davies Hanson, Jordan Peterson. Some people will be aware of Jordan Peterson, and Bobby Kennedy Jr., Profiles in Cowardice. And let me just read you a couple of paragraphs here, and then we'll hop down. Last year, when Dr. Jordan Peterson, he begins, the celebrated self-help pro-Western psychologist, toured occupied Palestine with Zionist Talmudist Ben Shapiro, interested observers considered it an ill omen. Mr. Shapiro is one of many anti-Palestinian bigots and war Zionists roaming the airwaves on far-right podcasting, writes Hoffman. I don't agree with some of those points, by the way. On domestic policies, Mr. Shapiro is sometimes a champion of commonsensical traditional values. Yet one must ask, how sincere is he about those values when he has contempt for millions of Palestinian people viciously oppressed by his beloved Israeli regime? Biden's regime is wicked, but Netanyahu's regime is virtuous, according to Ben and his sidekick, Jordan Peterson. Those are two thoughts amounting to a bipolar mentation. Always interesting words with Hoffman. I don't even know what a mentation is, so maybe someone can look it up and put it in one of the chats, either Rumble or somewhere like that, and we'll see what mentation, M-E-N-T-A-T-I-O-N. Dr. Peterson posted this semi-coherent tweet on X, Twitter. Here it is. Jordan B. Peterson's tweet to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on October the 7th. Give 'em hell, at Netanyahu. Enough is enough. And Hoffman writes, give who hell, Dr. Peterson? In the fog and fever of war, given the past crimes of the Israelis, to issue a general admonition to their prime minister to give them, the Palestinians, hell, is a warrant for the genocide of the dehumanized Palestinian people, 2 million of whom are hostage to Hamas due to being confined by the Israeli military and a US client state, Egypt, to a tiny concentration camp known as the Gaza Strip, 25 miles long and 5 miles wide. As I said, this is a long article and I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But the situation is not black and white, albeit that the mainstream media instantaneously decided that it was and have been pounding away with atrocity propaganda from the minute it started, because that's what they do. And this is in the same vein. Obviously, the most atrocious thing that we've read, I haven't seen evidence. I'm not looking for it. It may well turn out to be true, although it sounds completely nuts to me. But what do I know? I'm thousands of miles away. Is this thing about babies' heads being taken off? 40 of them, I believe, according to the report, which has since been disproved or disapproved or negated by other people over there in Israel, where these attacks have taken place. Something has obviously taken place. But I don't think that has. However, I'm quite open to being corrected later on if it turns out that it's completely true and I'm talking through my bottom today. There's always a good chance that we're all doing that, isn't it, from time to time, I think. But this thing about in the fog and fever of war that Hoffman writes, it's this hijacking of emotions. Now, we go back 100 years. Yeah, use your brain, your great time machine. Let's whiz back 100 years, well, 110 actually, to about 1914. Whoosh. And this is where I think, I mean, maybe it happened before that, but it's certainly the pivot point that I recall most easily is the atrocity propaganda that was whipped up with regards to Germans ploughing across the fields of Belgium with babies on bayonets. Anybody remember that one? Babies on bayonets, it was 110 years ago. Yeah. Now they don't even bother with that, apparently. It's taking babies' heads off. It's such an appalling thought that it shocks you. It is an appalling thought. And if it's been acted upon, it is, of course, appalling. And I'm going to run out of adjectives to describe it. It is repellent on every level. We don't like this sort of stuff, for good reason. But it turned out, of course, that the Germans weren't doing that. They were just, it was just said that they were. And the saying of it was enough to get people super riled up and do atrocious things back. There was another thing where they were making glue. I think there was a glue factory during World War One, and so the Germans came in for that as well. Also, complete nonsense, I believe. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was nonsense too. So, we have to take all of these things with very large grains of salt and look at the whole situation. Of course, the mainstream media won't be doing any of that. It's not charged with doing that. It's charged with hijacking the emotional state of the listeners and the viewers. And it's doing a very good job because that's what it knows how to do. And it shuts down critical thinking very quickly. I mean, where would Holmes have been if every time he came across a stiff, he was a sort of a gibbering wreck or something like that? We'd never been able to work out any solutions to anything. And unfortunately, the vast majority of us, most of the time, have been like that. I'm going to suggest that most listeners here, of course, being super educated and really on the ball, aren't quite like that, but you never can tell. There are, some people might be completely offended by what I've just said, yet there's always two sides to a story, aren't there? Sometimes there's more than two. So, of course, the world's news media has been taken up with this. I've got another little article here to just move on. This is from State of the Nation. It came through to me a little bit earlier. Thank you, JK, if you know who you are, for your email where I picked up this link a couple of hours ago. This is from yesterday, October the 11th. And this one, actually, I probably could read all of this out because it's not too long, or certainly the bulk of it. It's not 3,000 words. It's probably about 500. This is via, first of all, there's a quote via the Washington Post. Security experts say the war is the result of severe intelligence and military failures. Is it now? Hamas and Islamic Jihad militants had been training for weeks near the Israeli border, drilling in rocket launches, kidnapping soldiers and storming settlements. Aaron Zvi Farkash, former head of the Israel Defense Forces military intelligence branch, told Israeli radio station Reshet Bet that, quote, "After we are able to probe this, we will see that we knew almost everything. There were intelligence assessments hours before. The question is, did we understand what we knew?" I think there's another question, actually. I think the other question is, why was nothing acted upon it? Hamas is, in all likelihood, and certainly been a lot of reports of this, a creation of the Israeli intelligence services. Now, there's a lot of information over here with regards to MI6, or maybe MI5, or maybe both. I think MI6 is the external one, that were involved in upholding the IRA for many years because they didn't want peace to break out. This is power, death, war politics as waged by these spooks. Spooks are basically in charge of the world to a great degree because they're the foot soldiers of the central bank people, and their policies will be carried out in the darkness, in the gloom. This is what we have to endure, you know, over and over again. So Hamas, a lot of evidence suggests it's a creation of them. This seems like a bizarre and odd thought. Well, why would they do that? Well, because war is a great cover for all sorts of stuff, particularly when people are losing political control and influence. And the reports that we see, if they are reports, I mean, all of this could be just concocted hogwash, but it generally seems that Netanyahu has been suffering considerably from a lack of popularity, and this might help him in some way or another. It's also interrelated, I think, with the Ukrainian situation, which of course has been a bogus conflict from the start. There's something dreadfully foul taking place there as well. And these things are so riddled with detail that we'd be here for 10 hours just going through the whole thing. The bottom line here is that, you know, we're probably being lied to. I think that's a safe bet. I'd take it any day. The idea is to try and discover over the days ahead just to what degree. This doesn't mean that conflicts and things will just stop because somebody suddenly detects that people are lying. No, what will happen is there'll be even more lies coming through, even more. Let's carry on a little bit with this. Egyptian intelligence, he writes. By the way, the writer here is somebody called Ben Barthe, B-A-R-T-E-E. He has an account on Substack called Armageddon Prose. Armageddon out of here. Armageddon Prose. Egyptian intelligence, he writes, which would be in a position to know something, given that Egypt controls part of Gaza's borders, reportedly warned Israeli intelligence repeatedly that Hamas was planning something big. Hamas was planning something big. And yet they did very, very little about it. Now, I came across, I've got to just find this. I've got it now. Here we go. Just wanted to read you this. This is from Haaretz. I saw this the other day. Now, Haaretz is the main quality newspaper, or amongst the main quality newspapers in Israel. The oldest and most influential newspaper, the little comment writes here. And this is from, I'm trying to find a date. I thought it was about 2019, actually. Could be wrong. Never mind. It's recent. Oh, yeah, it is. March 2009. There's a date in it. I'll read this out. This is a tweet from Haaretz from, oh, no, it's regarding March 2019. It's brief. It says this. Anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state has to support bolstering Hamas and transferring money to Hamas. Netanyahu told his Likud party's Knesset members in March 2019. This is part of our strategy. By deception shalt thou wage war. I think that's some kind of paraphrasing of the Mossad battle cry, whatever you want to call it. No doubt all the other secret services have got something similar. So there you go. That would lend support, would it not? That Hamas is a creation of them to stop peace actually breaking out. To stop peace breaking out. And I bet not a lot of people know that. Do you think we're going to see that on the BBC? I don't think so. Do you think they're going to dredge these things up and do all that kind of stuff? I don't think so. So, what do you do? What's the next conclusion? Most people, of course, are seeing these things in the first degree, because we all do. I've got a comment here from Cat7 backing it up. There we go. And a copy of it over, if you're on Rumble and you go to Rumble, you'll see. There's a link there. Thanks, Cat17. Or is it Catty7? Sorry if I've got it wrong. There's a link to an image, I think, of the tweet. And Netanyahu said, even in 2019, we must fund Hamas. Hamas. So now what do we do? Now what do we do in terms of our thinking? What shall we do in terms of our thinking? Well, we'd have to say, have we moved to a second degree? So most people see things in the first degree. This is the wallop on the head, courtesy of the mainstream media, the instant blush with so-called facts and truth, and you're emotionally charged, and off you go. Oh, no, they've stuck babies on bayonets in 1914. Oh, no, they're turning people into glue. Oh, no. Hamas have just spontaneously entered into Israel, and nobody knew anything about it. Now, second degree is where you start to pick that apart. Third degree is where you find out all the forces behind what it is you think is really going on. Maybe there's a fourth and the fifth. I've not really thought about it too much more than that. But there is always a background story. You will, of course, note that the mainstream media don't do the background story. They don't do it. And the background story is deep and long and broad and wide and has been going on for a long time, which is why I've been touching upon, it's certainly one of the reasons why, I've been touching upon these historical things, upon the hijacking of the hearts and minds of the French. Interestingly, just taking a quick detour away from it, because this, of course, is a story that's unfolding as we go. It's unfolding as we go, and we're going to watch one lie bolted on after another. I think a salient point here in terms of the pragmatic realm is that Israel has, so we are informed, and it would seem highly likely, got one of the best equipped armies in the world. It is backed by the remnant of the might of the United States. Forgive me if you're cross about that, but it's true, because just like the British Empire, which didn't exist, so too the American Empire, which also never existed except on a piece of paper, is now undergoing its contraction period, where those that have used it seem to have had enough of it and want something else to play with, something like that. China, maybe, seems to be that way. So we have this situation where Israel, one of the most powerful military states and information gathering states, knows all this information about this attack and does nothing. Nothing. They're telling us they're doing nothing. Yet there have been voices come out of Israel from people on the ground there that have said this is an inside job. There was a veteran of the IDF, speaking in Hebrew or whatever the language is. Forgive me for being a moron. but speaking in Israeli, basically saying that when she was there in the IDF, I think she'd retired maybe 20 years or so ago, even then, she said if a mouse comes near that fence, they know before it's even got there. Everybody's on alert. Everybody knows. The chances that they wouldn't know is ridiculous, because the scale of the attack seems to be that they would have had to prep, as that article was saying, and men would have had to come in and do all these sorts of things. So this is to serve some other ulterior purpose, just like 9/11 was. Just like Germans with babies on bayonets was. Just like World War II was. Just like Vietnam was. Just like Korea was. Just like the troubles in Ireland have been, or were, or was. There's always other things taking place. So knowing things in the second and third degree seems to me to be key to the whole thing. Absolutely key. And without it, without knowing about these things, the vast majority of people are going to once more be led by the nose, and are being led by the nose, through the emotional slaughterhouse, as it were, and to get them into a right old state so that there's going to be even more mistakes made. One of the touching things, sad things, extremely unpleasant things about the French Revolution information, and they're just about to march on Versailles, so I don't know whether we'll read anything out from it today, but there'll be more between now and the end of November. I do plan to keep coming back to it. Is the way that people, good people, who were helping the peasants, were turned on by the peasants and killed, because the peasants were fed information that was complete bunk, and they were whipped up into an agitated state such that the only way through, they thought, was to hang who they now perceived were people who'd been trying to harm them. When in nearly all cases, including the king, they'd been doing everything they could to feed them. But there were communicators in between a nascent sort of mainstream media on the ground in France at the time, agitators in the crowd, literally driving people into a frenzy by providing lies from multiple points so that people believed it were true, purely because so many of these agents were saying it and they couldn't detect them as agents anymore. So that buildup of all that kind of stuff is going on again, this time really with the mainstream media. That's really what's happening. Okay. Opening shot there. Let's play a song. This was released just for a break. I'm just going to draw breath. I have half a pint of gin. That's a joke, by the way. I only have a quarter of a pint. And we'll play this song. You'll recognize this, but this is a studio version. I think it came out a couple of years ago. By Blind Joe, I Will Not Comply. Happens to be in the bin, so it's going to get played. Here we go.
I will not comply. Quit trying to take me to task, cause I don't want to wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lies.
back last March. I've had an achy, breaky heart like old Billy Ray Cyrus. I've been catching a case of the blues from the news around this damn coronavirus. Now they're telling us we gotta keep our chin divers up, even if we got the shot in the arm. Nobody's talking about exercise or eating food that's fresh grown from the farm. That's why I will not comply. Quit trying to take me to task, 'cause I don't wanna wear a mask or take a vaccine that could maybe make me die. They got no scientific evidence to back that crap up. All they do is feed us lie after lie. That's why I will.
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil and stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
.zil, obviously being British, we don't say things like that. We say Z-I-L, but then, you know, what are we? Are we two people separated by a common language? I hope not. I don't think so, actually, but it's a good phrase, isn't it, to turn around. Yeah, the Opera Browser. So .zil, I think they're issued by Unstoppable Domains. They have just changed track there. Look, it's like the first 30 minutes didn't even happen. .zil is from Unstoppable Domains. These are interesting domain names. You need to look them up if you don't know too much about it. But it's connected through with the IPFS, the Interplanetary File System, which is a decentralized web page holding network. And there are other things as well to look at. In fact, I need to do a show on Qortal. Q-O-R-T-A-L, Qortal, which is very interesting and may be of great help to all of us going ahead as the censorship police, you know, get an extra pair of boots each week to come around. Hello, hello, hello. Have you been thinking certain things? I think not. I think we want you thinking those thoughts, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you're listening to Paul English Live here on WBN324.com. And we're also going out on Freefall Radio from South Africa as well. At the same time, we're on Rumble and we're on Odyssey. And what else are we on? We're also on Speak Free Radio at speakfreeradio.com. And probably, possibly, I think, although I've not seen a notice from it tonight, maybe on GVN, Global Voice Network. So great to be here. This is the new home for the show from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. UK time, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. mainland Europe. 3 p.m. start time US Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Mountain, midday Pacific. I'm going to turn into a watch salesman at this rate. Speaking of which, you see, this wasn't planned. I watched a documentary about a guy that made watches. I don't know if you've seen it. I got to dig it up and throw it back in, actually. He moved to the Isle of Man, which is in the Irish Sea, between England stroke Wales and Ireland, and he made watches by hand. It's an astonishing documentary. I mean, he designed them and he built every last bit. And one of his watches when he died, or one of these pocket watches that he built, went for £1.5 million. And to me, if I had it, it looked to me as though it was worth it, to be quite honest. Anyway, there you go. Completely got nothing to do with what we were talking about. Now, mentation. I asked about what mentation is. I mean, it's pretty straightforward now, it turns out. But mentation. Thanks, Patrick, for sending this in. It simply means, there's not a biggie, mental activity. There you go, mental activity. Although most activity appears to me to be mental these days. Ho, ho, ho. But yeah, mental activity. So we need lots of that, don't we? To stop ourselves going mentally inactive and then becoming mental and ending up like Joe Biden, which is something you wouldn't wish upon your worst enemies. Oh, hang on just a minute. No, you probably would, I think. Now that I think about it, I think it's probably quite good. So I think, you know, I'm not going to plow through the whole of the Hamas-Israel thing anymore for today. I don't think I'm going to. You never know. It might come bounding back. If you want to call in and you've got certain points, you can. I haven't even put it up today yet, but actually, you know what? If I'm going to take calls in, if someone's going to call, I better really put the... I better bring the actual studio up, because I couldn't take them anyway right now, could I? Which is a bit... So you're going to hear me clattering. You know that sound that's so irritating when someone's doing a show and you hear them thrashing around on the keyboard and it's them like that? Do you hear that? It's irritating beyond belief, isn't it? So I've gone and brung one of my little rules. I never wanted that to happen, but there we go. If you want to call in... Bum, 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 presses button, sees little face, rolls around... Knocks gin flying. There we go. Marvellous. Wonderful. There we go. It's up. So if you've got any questions as we go along, or not, but you want to call in about anything much, the lines stay open. As I said, this is early days for the show, so, you know, it's not as if I'm overwhelmed with calls, and that's cool too, so don't worry about it. But the place to go to on your browser, you could even do it on a browser on a phone, if you just go to paulenglishlive.com/call, C-A-L-L, and it'll bring you through to StreamYard Studio. Some of you will be familiar with that, and we'll patch you into the show, or you can, you know, you can send me some horrible messages or some nice ones or whatever you want to do. So there we go. And speaking of little technical things like this, because my mind's getting jogged all the time with little things, this is what, episode 6, I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, episode 6. I'm probably going to stop numbering them soon, because it just sounds a bit lame somehow. Maybe it's just, this is October the 12th, but it is the 6th one then. So I tell you, these 6 weeks have flown by, but it took me this long to get my act together around having a podcast follow-up for the show. It's a bit of a joke, really, because I've done so much for so many other shows, but my own, no, I couldn't get around to getting it done. It was really, really tricky. If you go over to paulenglishlive.com, bottom right, you have to do it on a browser. I don't design or build websites for telephones. Okay, I'm not interested in them looking good on phones, which, of course, makes me an idiot, because no doubt many people are picking these things up on phones, so we'll get around to it at some point, but... on the bottom left-hand side, you'll see a link to Podcast Index, which is a great idea, Podcast Index. It's for independent podcasters to stop the centralization and control of the podcasting market, which you may well have noticed is taking place, just as it has taken place with all other aspects of internet activity. Anyway, I've got the previous episodes up there, not that you would necessarily need to go and get them unless you wanted to. The show is, of course, almost instantly available on Rumble after the show is finished, and also on, well, Odyssey's not so quick, it takes a little while, but it'll pop up there and elsewhere. So at least I've got the audio record of the shows now, and if you've got an RSS feed reader or you use Podcast Addict or whatever it is on your phone, you'll be able to subscribe and get the shows as they come through. If you miss it live, which of course most people tend to, because we're all in different time zones, aren't we? That kind of stuff. So anyway, that's just another little sort of tick off on the to-do list and getting these things. So we're learning loads today. Mentation and It's always nice to learn a new word, isn't it? Although it's not really. I wouldn't have used it, to be quite honest. You know, being sniffy is a bit too much. You don't need that. Just thinking is fine. So, I'm a simple lad. Now, what was the next thing I wanted to cover or look at? I know. Have you ever been to Luton Airport? Does it even mean anything to you? Luton Airport used to be the butt of jokes here in England because you had the big two, Heathrow and Gatwick, and then Luton was sort of like you had to go on a drive and get there and all this, that and the other. So it was not deemed to be the best airport, but it's thrived and done all sorts of things. It's thrived so much that it a huge part of it burnt down on Tuesday. There was a fire. There was a fire at Luton Airport because a car just got set on fire and it destroyed 1,200 cars. That's quite a few, isn't it? 1,200. 1,200 cars in this car park were burnt to a crisp. I mean, crisp is probably the wrong word. They were just burnt out shells, completely gone. Tragic stories of people with brand new £45,000 Mercedes, now a smouldering wreck. I mean, I'm hoping that their insurance covers it. No doubt it did. If you were fully comp, but not a lot of people are fully comp. Anyway, there'll be lots of fun. I'm not too worried, to be quite honest. But the interesting thing about the reports was, because everybody is pretty sharp on these things, I think, certainly probably in this space, everybody went immediately electric vehicle, right? I did. But the first reports that were coming out, I think, on the BBC website, I don't go there. I don't think I go there. These things just get sent back through to me. The first reports were that it was a diesel. Oh, no. I thought, a diesel? How does a diesel just explode? Because it did explode, this thing. Unless someone had put a bomb in it. Diesels don't normally explode, do they? I mean, if they did, we'd have been having a problem for donkey's years. Oh, another diesel's exploded on the M23 or whatever it is. You know, this, that and the other. Anyway, it turns out it wasn't a diesel. Actually, it was, but it wasn't the diesel bit that had gone wrong. No, it was a diesel hybrid. That's right. It had electric engines in there. And, of course, the electric engines come with a battery, don't they? Yeah, they do. They come with a battery. And I heard someone, was it today or yesterday? And I don't know where I heard these things. Do you get that stuff flying through your ears? And if I made a note of everything, I'd never get anything done. I won't be able to cook breakfast. I'd be just making notes all day. Saying that they really shouldn't be called electric cars. And I think they shouldn't. They should be called battery cars. They should be called batteries. And because that's what they are, right? So they go up in flames, battery cars and this, that and the other. And I've got, I want to play you something here about this madness with this garbage with so-called electric vehicles. Where is it now? Come in, Alan Jones. You know Alan Jones? You might recognize his voice. A good, lively, seasoned TV pundit down in Australia who calls a spade a spade. Listen to this.
Electric vehicles are the latest climate change fashion, except that a Norwegian shipping company has banned electric, hybrid and hydrogen cars from its ferries. After a risk analysis, it was concluded that the risk to the safety of the shipping fleet was too significant. If an electric vehicle catches fire, they said, the fire can no longer be extinguished. And they cited last February a ship with e-vehicles on board. The vehicles caught fire. The fire couldn't be extinguished. The ship sank.
An improperly disconnected car battery, that's what the NTSB says, sparked a massive fire that caused an explosion aboard a car carrier ship at Blun Island last year, injuring multiple firefighters.
An electric vehicle is thought to have started a fire on board a cargo ship carrying thousands of cars. One crew member was killed and others injured.
And that's what happened recently at Sydney Airport, which is with these lithium-ion batteries.
What we've got is the casing for a fully electric vehicle, heavily impacted by fire. That does appear to be the area of origin.
Nightmare for a local family. They say an electric car sparked this fire that destroyed their home.
Four people died from this fire at an e-bike repair shop.
Fire gets into the battery pack. They do something which is called thermal runaway. And if it gets into the battery pack, it takes up to 40 times more water than an average car fire.
Even when the immediate threat is put out, Austin Fire says there's still the potential for a fire to reignite with an electric vehicle.
A Tesla in Scottsdale catches on fire not once, but twice.
So, has Bowen presented us with a risk analysis in relation to purchasing, driving, charging electric vehicles and disposing of the batteries? Nothing. In the first 6 months of this year, there has been a 20% increase in lithium battery-related fires in New South Wales.
We are seeing a lot more incidents in and around lithium-ion batteries.
The cause of the fire was a lithium-ion battery that had failed.
The suspected cause, a lithium battery-powered e-scooter that was being charged.
The different marks on the wall is where the battery has actually exploded.
Now, these batteries are sometimes thrown into rubbish bins instead of being disposed of safely.
It was an explosion. It was involving expired lithium chips. The process they were using was putting these chips in a bucket and putting some water in the bucket to actually make an oxidisation process occur.
The Fire and Rescue New South Wales Acting Deputy Commissioner of Field Operations, Trent Curtin, has said that firefighters were responding to an average of more than three battery fires a week from in-home charging issues or incorrect disposal. I mean, surely to goodness, know-alls like Bowen should be fully informing users of electric vehicles as to where the risks lie. He won't do that, because he's ideologically committed to getting rid of petrol-fired cars and forcing us into electric vehicles.
Now is the time for the conversation on how we increase the uptake of electric and low-emissions vehicles.
Mind you, he doesn't tell us where the electricity is going to come from, nor the risk. Now, ignorance can sometimes be forgiven. Arrogance from people like Bowen can't be. These people, I've told you over and over again, are dangerous.
Hands up, everyone who wants an electric car. Nothing. Nothing. So he gets the point across well. So there you go, Luton Airport, burnt to a crisp. These things are junk. And of course, I would suggest it's the battery technology that is the great Achilles heel of it. It doesn't take a genius now to say that, does it? But the whole nature of producing batteries is ridiculous. I mean, it takes more energy in terms of putting the diesel into the diggers to get the material out to produce the battery than it does if you just run the car on diesel in the first place. And there are other things that we can run on. But the main point I would suggest is this. They have to have, in all of the technologies that we use, they have to have a control point. And the battery is going to be it. They have to meet you. They want to control you through that kind of stuff. That's kind of the problem. So it's not so much a technology problem, because I'm sure there are solutions to this. It's yet again the mentally defective ruling class problem. Okay, so whilst that was running, I've been joined by... Ooh, let me just unmute this here in the call room. Where have we got this? By Pale, are you there? Can you hear me? You maybe can hear me, but I think I might have muted you. It says mute. Let me just do that. And let me unmute you now. Da-da-bum-bum. Look at me pressing buttons, not knowing quite what I'm doing. Okay, so Pale, are you there? Can you hear me? No. No answer came the reply at this stage. Don't know why. Let me just check that we've got everything here. Nope, I'm making a noise. Never mind. Okay. Maybe if you can hear this, you might want to rejoin the session again. I don't know what's gone wrong here, but although you're in the session, I've got no sound coming through from you. So maybe you just wanted to listen at this point. Let me just have a look. Private chat. You hear me? I will rejoin. Cool. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. First time me bumbling around with buttons and things like this to try and get it to... should be working. Why is it not working? What's going on? Let me just check this. Don't you love people talking their technicals and hitting keyboards? I think it's absolutely fantastic. Let me just... There we go. We've got a sound. So you heard that. Everybody should have heard that. So, okay, cool. So anyway, yeah, electric vehicles, not very good, are they? And remember Nikolai Tesla, or Nikola Tesla? We all do, don't we? We all used to go for a drink with him and all that kind of stuff. Old Nick. There is a tale of... let me just... here's... Right, let's add it back. Hi there. Pale. Can you... Well, you can hear me, but you probably need to check your audio settings because we're not getting any signal through from you. If you look at the image, you'll see that as I'm talking, we get that little fluttering of the image. People will know what I'm talking about. But around you, there's no, if you're making a noise, your microphone's not set up right. If you go to the settings at the bottom, and maybe you can set your microphone up there. If you look at the bottom of the page, there's a thing called settings. Go to audio and try and identify your microphone so that you can come through to the session. Not much I can do until you've done that. Hopefully that's clear. Cool. What was I saying? I'll just go and do this little bit anyway. I dug something up on Tesla that I'd remembered from ages ago that I wanted to cover about this stuff. Where have you gone? Come on, Nicolo. Where have I done with you? I put him somewhere. Oh, here we go. All right. So back in 1931, Tesla... by the way, when you go and look at this story now, Wikipedia say it's a complete myth and it never happened. Yeah, right. Okay. I'll believe what I want to believe. Thank you very much. You know, I'm going to believe Wikipedia. On certain things, Wikipedia is useful, like maybe on the definition of the word mentation. But on everything else, not so much. We got another caller in as well. So I can see you there. We'll add you in a second. Let me just run through this little bit here. Back in 1931, I think it is. This is worth reading out. You might be familiar with this, but it's still worth going over again. But back to our electric automobiles, it says. In 1931, under the financing of Pierce Arrow, a car manufacturer, and George Westinghouse, a 1931 Pierce Arrow was selected to be tested at the factory grounds in Buffalo, New York. The standard internal combustion engine was removed and an 80 horsepower, 1800 RPM electric motor installed to the clutch and transmission. The AC motor measured 40 inches long and 30 inches in diameter, and the power leads were left standing in the air, no external power source. At the appointed time, Nikola Tesla arrived from New York City and inspected the Pierce Arrow automobile. He then went to a local radio store. I didn't know about all this. This sounds a little bit far-fetched. I'll just go down and get some gear, but never mind. He then went to a local radio store and purchased a handful of tubes. 12, that'll be valves. Don't know if you're familiar with valves. They're wonderful things. They make the best amplifiers in the world, even to this day. Wires and assorted resistors. A box measuring 24 inches long, 12 inches wide, and 6 inches high was assembled, housing the circuit. The box was placed in the front seat and had its wires connected to the air-cooled brushless motor. Two rods, a quarter of an inch in diameter, stuck out of the box about 3 inches in length. Mr. Tesla got into the driver's seat and pushed the two rods in and stated, "We now have power." He put the car into gear and it moved forward. The vehicle, powered by an AC motor, was driven at speeds of 90 miles an hour and performed better than any internal combustion engine of its day. 1 week was spent testing the vehicle. Several newspapers in Buffalo reported this test, and I used to have the newspaper report, which I've been searching for today. Couldn't find it. If anybody can find it, a Buffalo newspaper, early 1930s, it's a wonderful tale. It's better than this one. Came from... From the ethers, this is, it says, when asked where the power came from, Tesla replied, from the ethers all around us. The ether is a big thing to be discussed, okay? The fluid in which we all live, yeah. Several people suggested that Tesla was mad, really, and somehow in league with the devil, no, in league with sinister forces of the universe. Well, you know, he became incensed. Quite cross. Removed his mysterious box from the vehicle and returned to his lab in New York City. His secret died with him, as did many others. So, I suspect, not even just, not that I'm bothered too much about electricity, but there is other power supplies and sources available out there for us to use. So there we go, Tesla. And of course, they've taken his name and they put it in an electric car that runs on junk batteries. And if you've seen what they have to do in those African countries to dig up the cobalt, it's not good. One other horrifying part or horrifying aspect of electric vehicles, or I should say the batteries that they use. They've got cobalt in them. And not that I'm sure anybody here is planning to do this, but because this show is probably not listened to by the sorts of high-level intelligence spooks and reprobates that could do this or are using this as a bargaining tool. But if you'd put a small tactical nuclear weapon, and we've all got one at home, haven't we, in our sheds? I know I've got one. I've got a couple, actually. But if you take one and you put it next to, or you manage to hit a Tesla or any electric vehicle that's got one of these batteries in it, it produces a type of cobalt called cobalt 50 or something. It's got a number. It's one of the most lethal things in the world. And one vehicle hit by one of these things would take out five city blocks or something like that. You can look it up. So effectively, these are like bargaining chips. Countries can be controlled by other countries because they've got electric vehicles on the ground. All they need is a small tactical nuclear weapon. And we've all got one, like I said. And you're in deep doo-doo. Isn't that bad? Isn't that very bad? I think one other aspect of the nuclear fuels industry as well is that there are certain types of reactors that can be made. And currently, most of the reactors are the crap ones. There was a design put together in the US in the 60s. They may have got it from somewhere else, but there was certainly a proposal for a nuclear power plant that would reuse the spent material, such that instead of having 500,000 years or whatever ludicrous time frame this toxic stuff has got that they bury in concrete bunkers and someone's going to forget about, aren't they? Because we might all not be here to even remember this. These things can be reused again and again and again and again, getting power out of them, till in the end, the last scrap after you've got it out has got like a half-life, or it's toxic for like 30 to 50 years. Now you suddenly go, well, that's manageable. We could deal with that. Do they build those reactors? Answers on a postcard, please, too. Ah, I see the return of Paul. By the way, just before I add Paul in, if you want to call in, if you missed it, or whatever, you want to call in, go to paulenglishlive.com/call. paulenglishlive.com/call. I'm going to look at adding some telephone numbers to make it a little bit easier, because you do have to, you know your way around a browser and everything. But actually, for now, for these early days, this actually works, to keep the onslaught of calls at bay. Now, it does work, but we'll look at getting a US and a UK phone number so you can call in. I think that might be worth having a look at. Ah, Paul.
Sounds like fun. Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Oh, hang on just a minute. Something very bad has started. Just a minute. Something that's not supposed to start. It's the end of the show. I know what it is. Stop that.
Oh.
Yes, because my timer here at this end is still thinking it's last week, and I checked everything, and there's about 15, 20 different things that had to be reset on the timer. And that evil little thing came in. It's not really, it's the end show. It's not ended. We're only halfway through. Paul, welcome back. How have you been? How's your week been?
Oh, my week's been a little hectic. It's been a little crazy, but then again, it's also been a little bit fun. Now, I was really enjoying the first part of the show. I figured that I'd call in today, but I figured I'd give you the first hour and get your feet and just get out the topics that you wanted to talk about, just in case we went a different direction. But honestly, I was enjoying the first hour so much, I was really debating whether or not to call.
Well, you obviously made your mind up. I don't mind. No, you didn't screw it up. It's great. It's great. It's actually, I sit here all day, you know. Well, not all day. I sit here every day of my life. No, going through loads and loads of different things, trying to, you know, screw things together. And every time I do it, I think this could be better and this could be better. And then someone calls in and you go, oh, this is how it works, right? You just get a conversation going and it flows. It's definitely better. So it's great that you've called back. I love it. It's really, really good. And I've actually been sending out invites to people who don't know me over the last few days saying, look, you don't know me, but I'm really interested in what you're talking about and I want to pull you in here. So I've got to go on a sort of, on a charm offensive with certain people. Who on earth are you? Yeah, well, you know, I'm just this guy in a shed in the middle of nowhere, but I think we might be able to talk about some interesting things, and there's a lot of people could be really interested in hearing these sorts of things. I'll tell you what, Paul, we're just coming to the top or the end of the first hour, so I'm going to play a wonderful piece of music by Klaus Schwab. This is not original. This has been doing the rounds for the last few days, but I thought I'd get an oar in right now. So this is the end of the first hour. You're listening to Paul English Live. here at WBN324.com. We're going to play this. We've got a little ID after that. And then Paul will return back to the show. Okay? You okay with that? I think everything will be fine.
Yeah, I'm good.
Cool.
You heard Klausy McSchwab's first two records.
Vaccines back all night. You know nothing and be happy.
But this one is going to make your modified mRNA tingle. Time Lies presents Greatest Schwabs, Volume 15. A new world order in music.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All the unvaccinated are still alive. A little bit of Pfizer in my arm. A little bit of BioNTech does no harm. A little Johnson Johnson does the trick. A little AstraZeneca so you don't get sick. It's booster number 5. Let's talk about Vax, baby. Let's talk about Doc Fauci. Let's talk about all the weird and counter side effects, maybe. Let's talk about Vax. Let's talk about Vax a little, little, little. Come and take the 7th shot, the 7th shot. With a little luck you get my, oh! Myocarditis. You won't have to be rich. With CBDC, you'll have all you need. With central currency, we just take your extra wealth and your cash. And you can walk 500 steps, but not a single step more until the curfew activates and robot cops stand at your door. Just a small town boy drinking genetically modified soy. This ensures he doesn't procreate. Please stop breeding.
Stop the breeding.
We are almost 9 billion people. Please stop breeding right now. He didn't start a Pfizer. We just made you take it, even if you hate it.
Greatest Schwabs, Volume 15. Now available on Spotifyzer and MRN Apple Music.
All the caterpillar tastes like chicken in vine. And mealworm tastes just like a steak. Ain't nothing better than a deep-fried butterfly or centipede protein shake. Be sure to check the cricket mag nuggets out. They're almost as crunchy as worms. And chew your great grasshopper sandwich extra loud. Cause this is all you get. I don't care who you are, where you're from, don't care what you want, you will eat the bugs.
The Willy has what I need. I ordered Willy magazine.
The new Willy means fun and shwerble.
The Willy.
Sneak!
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil. And stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners, and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
And welcome back to part two, second hour, just gone 9 p.m., just coming up to 5 past 9 in the UK, 5 past 4 in the US. And welcome back, Paul, to the second half of this fixture this week. And we just got started, really, hadn't we? That thing, by the way, that little notification at the end of that, which we all use, you know, the opinions. Sometimes I think my opinions are somebody else's. I don't know about you. I sometimes think, where did I get that one from? But anyway, you were saying you've been having a fun week. Is that what you said? Or was it dreadful? I can't remember now.
No, actually, I've been having a pretty good week. It's been real hectic and sometimes uncertain, but a lot of good things have come about this week, and I'm liking it. And I just found out today that a show that I'm associated with that we've put on a bunch of different platforms has been picked up by yet another platform. And like this other this new one, it's like 1.5 million unique hits a month. And so I'm really excited about that.
That's great, isn't it? It's like we're all involved to some degree in kind of helping one another in a kind of piggyback marketing and connecting sort of process, which I think is wonderful, actually. And I think it's needed because there are all these different sort of little pockets of communicators. And if you can sort of find some kind of an ad hoc way of connecting and getting material out there and just pulling together, it's like a currency of helping one another out. So, you know, and the same goes here. So that's fantastic news. Yeah, really good. Always good stuff.
I like to think of it as crowdsourced patriotism. And all of the independent people,
yeah.
Okay, they're getting together, and just through interconnecting, I mean, come on, if cells work for the big TERRs, you know, they work for patriots too. So,
yeah, they do.
Just a different kind of cell.
It is, absolutely, yeah. I mean, and patriots an interesting. I mean, some people run away at the word patriot, but and then you've got patriots and nationalists and everything. I guess my take on it, because I'm always trying to find different ways of saying the same thing, and it all depends who I'm speaking to, you know. Sometimes I'd speak very gently to certain people, and other people, I think you can go sort of more full bore, can't you? It's difficult to know. Well, face-to-face, it's not so difficult. On the airwaves, it can be a bit difficult. You don't know, you're going, well, I don't think everybody's going to really sort of go for that little bit. But, generally, I think if you're against globalism, if you're against it, which is, of course, the sane position when you actually look into it, then you're a nationalist, whether you think you are or not. Because if we've got two choices, we've probably got an awful lot more than two. But and whether you like it or not, you're going to be called that. You better just get ready for it, because that's what the other side are going to call you. They like to call names. They're very effective. I'll tell you what, Paul, before you came on, we had somebody called Pale was trying to get through, and he or she is back again, and because we never even got to speak. So I'm going to add them in, and hopefully maybe this time we've got the microphone working. Pale, can you speak to us now? No. Crickets. Have you got crickets, Paul?
Yes, I've got crickets. Pale, if you go to the settings and then you go to the audio tab, when you talk, if your microphone is working, you'll see a little green chase bar right up there in the, it kind of looks like a thermometer or whatever. And that's your VU meter. If your mic is working, you'll see activity there. And if you don't, try. Switching to a different thing.
There you go.
There he is. There he is.
Pale, welcome to the show. You did it. Fantastic. Yeah.
Hello, Paul. Thank you. Hello. Thank you very much.
Hey, look, it's interesting. We've got Paul and Pale and Paul. It's all getting a bit worrying here. People can only call in whose names begin with a letter P. So I'm very pleased that Paul was here to sort you out, Pale. Anyway, welcome. And you were sending some comments there a little bit earlier when we were covering the battery stuff, but fire away. What did you want to talk about? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a few things, Paul. First of all, thanks for doing your show and for doing the letting people call in. I encourage other people to try it, even though it's it might be tricky. Yeah, I was talking about the newly created internal combustion engine that they made in China, and they've powered it instead of using petrol or diesel, using ammonia. And ammonia, as we probably remember from school is made up of nitrogen and hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And the air is about, a lot of the air is made out of nitrogen, and we can get hydrogen from water. So it's going to be very cheap fuel. Toyota bought into the idea. They love it. And their CEO says it's going to replace electric vehicles. So that's just one of the things I wanted to talk about there.
Yeah, I'd not heard of that one. I tracked it a lot about 20 years ago, not electric vehicles per se, just alternative engine technology. It's just one of those things. Once you get into this space and you start to question everything, you end up questioning, don't you, engineering cycles, and you go, why are we still using this? You know, and people moan about the internal combustion engine, but it's bloody reliable in all sorts of ways. And then you find out that they could improve it and this, that, and the other. But it's, of course, I think we've been cursed, as it were, if that's, it may be not the right word, but it's the geopolitical control second stage about petrol that's the key thing. They want to have political influence in these places where oil is found. And I think that's acted as a restrictor. I think the engineering solutions have up and down the line, certainly probably even since the 1930s, been found and buried because it doesn't suit the control grid system. Years ago I went to Nice in France, which sounds awfully posh, and I went down there to see an engine. And I've still got some video footage of my friend actually with this engine. I'll tell you what he did in a second. And the company was owned by a chap called Guy Negre, and he was a lovely guy. And him and his son were running this engineering plant just outside of Nice. And he used to work for Renault Formula One engines. That's what he did. And he was specifically tasked with valve timing on these V12s when they sounded absolutely amazing, those engines. It's just a boys thing, really, but it's a bit like Spitfire engines and Formula One engines. It kind of just does something to blokes, probably does things to blokesses as well, I don't know. So they drove all those valves with compressed air. He came across a design from, so he came across a design from a Polish engineer from 1915. He showed us, we went down, and when we went to his thing, there was a Renault engine all sort of broken into bits in the foyer so that you could see what he did. And it was great. It was a lovely guy. And they'd built an engine that run an engine, a car engine that runs on compressed air. They built a car. We got in it. We went for a drive in this car. This is 2001. Yeah. And they were gluing the cars together using Lotus car glue technology to glue these cars together. And it was just amazing. Absolutely. It just ran on compressed air. And you go, well, that's going to be expensive. Well, no, they had a very tiny electric pump. And what you did was at nighttime, you'd come and you'd plug it into the overnight rate, and it would recompress the entire tank. And it had a range of about 200 kilometers. Now, the tank technology was the worrying thing. It was like a scuba diving tank made out of laminated carbon, right? The pressure in it was so... Mm. And we were saying, yeah, but if it gets hit by something, what would that be, like a bomb going off or something? But they'd got them stress tested to like 10,000 feet below sea level. You know, there was a high-pressure thing, almost like a submarine build. And that was the most expensive bit. My friend, last bit... I had a video camera at the time, so we're driving around in this thing, and I'm going, this is really, it's not like a super cool high-speed thing, but in terms of an urban car, it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And my friend gets down on his hands and knees and puts his mouth over the exhaust pipe and breathed the air in. The air coming out of the tailpipe was purer than what went in because it had all these filters in the whole thing. And he didn't die. Wow. He's still alive to this day. So, there are solutions I love, but the one you've just talked about with ammonia sounds interesting.
Those are compressed air. I hadn't heard of that before, but if there's ever a zombie apocalypse now, they have some very high powered air rifles, and people could use those if they're out of ammunition, and melt their own air rifle pellets and cast them, and kind of go out and hunt for game or whatever with the compressed air.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll look out for the ammonia engine pail. And how long have you been sort of in this space of looking at things? Is this a relatively new thing for you, or are you a seasoned inquirer into the oddities of the world? Let's put it like that for right now.
I just like keeping abreast of what's happening in on the alternative media platforms, like your own website and Speak Free Radio, RadioAlbion.com, BitChute, Gab, yep, and Odyssey.
Yeah.
And try and find a sort of antidote to the mass media brainwashing.
Yes.
Platforms, yeah, like this, and find out what is really of interest instead of the drivel that they normally give us on the BBC or something like that.
The BBC giving us drivel? Are you sure? Well, the most admirable and trustworthy organisation in the face of the earth, aren't they? I mean, they always tell the truth, apparently, so it says on their brochure. And who are we to doubt them? Yeah, I'm completely with you. They're a ridiculous outfit. I think that they probably, you know, used to have some kind of credibility in the past, but that's all kind of gone. Pale, we got another caller coming in. Paul's dying to say some more things about his wonderful week as well. So if that's okay with you, I'm just going to bring this other caller in. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Been great hearing from you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Paul. I hope wonderful more people try and call in, and I look forward to more of your shows.
Right. Wonderful. Thanks very much. Great. God bless. Keep well. Bye for now, sir. Goodbye. Right, I've got to press some buttons here. What do I do? Remove from the stage. There we go. And we've got Paddy McGee. Hello. Welcome to the show. I didn't even have to guess or ask you your name. You'd written it in. That was very kind of you.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Paddy. Yes. Can I call you Paddy, or do I call you Mr. McGee?
I'd sort of be lying if I said it was my real name. I just felt that I should have.
No, I quite like it. I don't. Well. No. You've got to say no. It's your real name now. That's it. You stuck with it for life. That's it, Paddy. We've got to speak. All
I've
familiar
just
with
a few,
yeah.
Sorry, I just had a few. I really like your show. By the way, I've kind of listened to you for quite a while. I think you've got a very good radio voice. But I just had a few kind of areas that I'd like your kind of input or your take on, really.
Sure, yeah.
So the first one is like, what do you think of patriotic alternative, and would you consider sort of working with them?
I think I'd consider working with anybody, to be quite honest. Right now, for me, I'm just kind of trying to cut my own little furrow for a bit. I don't know quite what's going to happen. I think I mentioned right when I started, I've been kicking around and helping people with these sorts of things for about 10 years now, and even longer than that. So I've done lots of little projects, but I decided I had to get behind the mic, and I just want to see what can be covered there, because there's lots of little areas and bits of communication that I'd not really fully covered in my other ventures. Interesting that you said. I mean, I'm obviously, you probably know, I did an audiobook for Tom Goodrich a few years back, his book Hellstorm, which is a hell of a book, and it's a book of hell, and it's an awful book, and it's an awful audiobook, if you know what I mean. It's just about an awful topic. But we were invited on with Mark Collett from Patriotic Alternative about a year and a half ago, and then I subsequently went back, I think, in maybe January of last year, and did a show with him, which was a blast. It was really good. I mean, basically, I was talking about banking then, because I always keep coming back to banking, because I'd love to see it sorted out, he naively said. But it's possible. I mean, my view of politics is kind of a jaded one, because I'm much more interested in finding out what we have to do to move people to annihilate the bank in its current form. Now, if a political party or any political movement or group or an organization finds the means, I'll lend my support to it. I've got my own ideas about how these things should be done, but they're not necessarily going to work. And the other thing I think to bear in mind is really very gifted and intellectually bright, astonishingly good people in the past have come across this information, weren't able to shift it a bit, not one bit. So there's something missing. There's something, I think, on an emotional level, on a storytelling level, on a kind of myth level that we need. You might think that's where, but I absolutely am of the view you may well, maybe you speak to people and you provide them with facts. And I think there's only a certain percentage of us that are good with facts, really good with them. I'm not always good with them. I miss points and I go, blast, you know, I didn't see that. But many people are not. And that demoralization process that's been talked about a lot, when it's taking place with a lot of people, they're incapable of understanding facts. It's a really almost a definite thing I've said there, but I think they are. So how do we move them emotionally to get them concerned about the outcome of their own life? So it's almost as if this is a very precise thing. And if any organization is able to develop a communication space in which that happens, count me in. That's basically what I'm trying to do, but I'm not going to hit the bullseye all the time. Most of the time. No, I'm not. I'm just not. And what's your view of it? Are you sort of supporting it and part of that? Is that your sort of line for now?
In terms of PM, I'm quite a big supporter of theirs. They seem to be, they're not purely like a political, they're not even a political party because the Electoral Commission won't let them register, but they're pretty much a community building organisation. I think that's pretty much the best thing going forward that I can see right now that we've got available, really, in terms of sort of how to move forward. In terms of the banking stuff, my other couple of questions were based around that because I kind of... couple of things that occurred to me as I was listening to the replays of the last few shows you did. So I've just got a couple of extra things I'd like your take on, really.
Sure.
The first one is, and I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to hear you give your input. If the government can print money, they don't need to tax us. Why do they tax us?
Because the government's not printing the money. The private bank that controls your government is printing the money and tells the government what to do. This is why I don't have too much ambition in the political space, because I view it as a broken mechanism. So my take on taxation is it's a control mechanism. It's like a spigot to turn on and off. I've seen arguments from people saying, well, we couldn't run society without income tax. This is baloney. It's nonsense. It's complete rubbish. Why is it rubbish? Because we ran society fine without it until Pitt the Younger introduced it to fight the Napoleonic Wars in 1805 or something. So they wheeled this tax out. They said, oh, we've got to pay for these for our lads to go around and blow everybody to bits. And of course we did, I guess, from a certain perspective. So they did that. And then they got rid of it. Imagine that. They got rid of income tax. So it didn't exist after the Napoleonic Wars. I don't know exactly when, maybe 1816, maybe after the Battle of Waterloo, something like that. They went, oh, well, we're not doing that fighting anymore, so we don't need that money. We don't need it. Then someone said, you know, that was such a good tax. We ought to bring it back. By golly, they did. So I think it also, psychologically, it underpins what you perceive as the purchasing power of, in our case, the pound. You have to pay according to positive law. I don't mean that this is good law. Positive law is a law that acts on you. It compels you to respond to it. It works in a positive way, not in a good way. It's just like a charge. So you have to pay your taxes in pounds. Well, that means that everybody's got to pay their taxes in pounds, which undergirds the idea that it's worth something. That's part of it. That you can only pay your taxes in pounds. Now, the income tax is probably unlawful, and I've seen communications from people saying that it can be done away with. Even there are people doing courses saying that you don't have to pay it. This is probably true. The amount of study, though, that individuals would have to undergo to get to grips with it, I think is a barrier. So, and I feel this way about a lot of these knowledge bases that are very, very deep. I'm kind of looking at my watch going, we ain't got enough time for this. I really do think we haven't got enough time for it. I could be completely wrong. And if people are pursuing that and they come out the other side with a win, fantastic. I will eat my own words happily, gladly. I guess you have to make a decision about where you're going to put your energies. But income tax, I think it's for that reason. Because they're always talking about it.
My very limited understanding of it is that they could theoretically just print all the money they needed every year to fund government spending.
Yeah.
But... They tax in order to give the impression that they're actually spending money that they're responsibly getting from the people, which they would have had to do if the gold standard was still in place.
It's definitely an aspect of it. I think that the sort of psychological manipulation aspect of it now is considerable. It's very many layered about things. How about this as an idea? So in the UK, we have about 400 taxes. 400. All right. So there's the big ones are VAT, council tax, boo, you know, and income tax and cat tax and dog tax, bicycle tax, you know, trouser tax, not yet, but I, you know, whatever. So there's gazillions of the 400 of them. You could get rid of them all of them. You may have read this somewhere. This is a very interesting idea. And you replace it with one tax, one, a transaction tax. I think it only needs to be like 2%. 2% transaction tax. Every time you write a check to your bank account, you have to pay someone £100. You actually, it costs you 102. That's it. £2 out of every £100. That would produce something like five times the amount of money that they currently get in from income tax. Problem solved. That's how you gear up networks in banking systems to serve the people. But of course, the main problem is not even to do with a system that you and I could design. You can get engineers to sit down, and that's what's needed for banking, not economists. You need engineers to work it out. And you go, this is what would work, and this is what we need. And this will make sure that there's sufficient purchasing power in the economy so that people can buy the goods and services that they need to live a good life. But of course, the orientation is that we are here to work for the economy. Everybody thinks that now, whether they know it or not consciously. The economy, oh my God, the economy. But we want to live. I mean, think about this, Paddy. And by the way, I'm really glad you picked a name beginning with P, because you would have ruined it. You'd have ruined it. It would have been something else. It's all been Paul and Paddy. So well done on that. That was really good. But the replacement tax with, I forgot what it's called, is it a Tobin tax, the thing I've just been talking about? It's something like that. I think it's a wizard idea. It's really good. But our thinking is all back to front, and we don't even know it. This is my take on it, including mine. It's all back to front because we come from a position of lack. There's never enough. There's always enough money for weapons, you'll know. You noticed, right? Always enough money for that. But there's never enough money to pay for those homeless ex-squaddies who are sleeping in doorways tonight that you and I can't do too much about, right? Those people. Apparently there's no money for them. There's no money for British families to get together and be supported. There's no money for that. No, we haven't got any money for that. Or for American ones. Or any of our people, wherever they may be, in Europe, here, the Americas, Australia. There's no money for the things that we need, but there's plenty of money for the stuff that we don't need, for the stuff that keeps the political class busy. I mean, the problem they would have, I would suggest, even though they maybe don't even think like that, the problem they would have is you could get a well-balanced economy functioning healthily, serving the people within about 5 years, I reckon. You can maybe do it even quicker now that we've got computer networks to sort out all the totting up, right? 3 to 5 years tops, you could do it. What would they do? You wouldn't need a Chancellor of the Exchequer. You go, well, it all works now. I know I'm being naive. There's always going to be problems, right? But we think as though we've got to live under this permanent problem. And guess what? We do, because they're going to make sure it permanently exists. Because if it didn't, they haven't got a job, have they? We're going to solve your economic problems. Well, we don't need you to do that. They're already solved. We need to boost industry. Why? What are you talking about? I mean, think about, you know, the other thing. I'm just spitballing here, to use a phrase or whatever it is. If you think about all the technology that has come along since World War II, communications technology, the improvements in industrial efficiency, all of these things, yet now we live in a situation where the husband and the wife both have to go out to work to make a payment on a house that's been sold 10 times over since it was built in 1842, right? That's now worth some astronomical number to fit in with an economic system that is obviously insane. It's not from our point of view, it's insane. But from their point of view, it's fantastic. They keep us held down so that we continue to pay for their mistakes because that class of people are a walking mistake. They're basically a massive historical mistake. And we have to find a way. I don't know how we're going to do this, because they've acquired a kind of mental attitude to the world, which makes them impervious to the sorts of communications and ideas that we're discussing here. How do you get through to these people? Can you? I don't think you can, because I've got no evidence to suggest that anybody ever has. So it's it sounds fun, doesn't it? Am I painting a rosy picture for you? You're getting all inspired, buddy. Oh, we can sort this out at the drop of a hat. It's to do with psychological, I hate using it, but it is. It's to do with a kind of an attitudinal issue. We want happy families, don't we? I've got somewhere written down for this show, the whole focal point for me is about happy families. I'm quite serious. That's exactly what it's about. How do we get them? And there's a lot involved in doing that, because nearly everything in our modern world is being structured to ensure the absence of happy, let alone happy families, the absence of families completely is the way it's going. Because, you know, the economy, manure, the whole lot of it.
I mean, I think you're talking about like simplifying the taxation system, but the thrust of my question really, as a thought experiment, is they already don't, you know, they spend more than they tax us because they can print money.
Yeah.
Could they just do away with taxes and fund 100% of their spending by printing money? And then obviously you're being taxed passively by virtue of the fact that people holding the currency, the fiat currency, are having it devalued.
Yeah, but they may be having their currency devalued, but isn't the quality of their life being revalued in a positive way? We would stop thinking about things possibly in terms of its monetary value. You don't know what
it would be. So you actually think that would be a good way to do things, do you?
Well, I think we could do it that way. Yeah, you could. I mean, the thought that's been running around in my head for the last year, a couple of years, is the main problem is to do with ownership of the central bank. It's privately owned by people that we don't know about, and that when we inquire, we're nasty for doing that. The government is organized by these, and the government lies to the people and say we're in charge of it. They're not, because it's not possible for you to cock it up for hundreds of years on end, is it? You just can't.
The only problem I've thought with that would be, wouldn't you get runaway inflation because the constant printing of money would devalue the currency?
Well, you'd have to have, as you always need, you need a referee, don't you? Suppose there was no income. Suppose you said that, well, all we're going to do is we're going to expand the money supply by 2% a year. It expands by more than that right now. And you want to, you know, the idea of prices going up is actually better than prices going down. Deflation's an absolute devastating thing. Okay. So and there's also, inflation's actually probably not quite what we've been taught it is. There's a guy from Canada, I don't know if he's still alive, a guy called John C. Turmel. He called himself the engineer. He's in the Guinness Book of Records for standing most in elections more than any other human being on the face of the earth. I think he's fought and lost something like 90 elections. But he actually has got some very interesting mathematical understandings of what causes inflation. And it's generally not what is posited around. Now, I don't go into it at that level. I just, when I was inquiring into all these monetary groups maybe 20 years ago, I stumbled across his work and it was very interesting. You may be right. I think there are certain questions that we're not in a position to answer right now. But in terms of a simplified structure, I'm suggesting that you and me and everybody in England, and the same for the people in America, own our own bank. We must own it. It cannot be privately owned. The people of the nation must own the national bank. Banks must be restructured so that they don't make a profit. What's that about? Seriously, what is that about? It's because our thinking, oh no, we have to make a profit. Why? What I want is good food on my table. You've been making profits for 50 years and the quality of food in supermarkets is going down. So that's not working. The thinking, I think, this is just my take on it, you know, and it's a bit labyrinthine what I'm talking about, shooting all over the place, but that's kind of it. You could structure it. You could pull in guys, Paddy, way more qualified than me, and sit them down. Like Richard Werner, who's not a million miles from me, and who I'd like to get in touch with. I don't know if you know about him, but Dr. Richard Werner said some brilliant things. And he is fully qualified and really knows the central bank scam, but can talk about it in that academic way because he is a trained academic and he's a wonderful guy. And I would love to get him on the show. I've yet to make and to bring him on. Whether he would come here or not, I don't know. But to talk about these ways of doing it, there are people that would know how to restructure it, but they're kept out of the space. We've got the brains exist. The brains absolutely exist. There's no two ways about it. It's designed this way on purpose to keep you in a kind of bogus struggle. It's, you know, if in National Socialist Germany, the 30s, they could restore their nation flat in 3 years from 1933 to 1936. This is one of the reasons why you're not supposed to look at that period of history. Oh, no, they were all evil. Oh, really? Okay. So I'm going to discard that. I'm going to go off and have a look. Thank you very much. And it turns out that there's something amazing took place there. And then you get all these other criticisms of it. But they structured their nation to support the growth of families. What's wrong with that? I don't understand what's... Oh, no, that's bad. You don't want lots of people. Here we do. We want lots of good...
And they fixed the country in 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more on the banking, like the fact that people should own the bank instead of it being private. The other thing that occurred to me as I was listening is the fact that the US... The dollar as a reserve currency seems to be under a little bit of threat. If the, say, the Chinese yuan became the reserve currency, a bit unlikely, but just in case it did,
yeah.
Do you think the people who are getting all the power from owning these things like the Federal Reserve, do you think they would lose their power in that case, or would they have a similar hold over the issuance of the yuan?
Well, in China, I think they already do.
So
they already did.
It would just be a similar situation, no matter what the reserve currency.
Yeah. It would look, the form would be different, but the experience, the structure will still be the same. If it's held in private hands, and you don't know who those private hands are, and who does, I used to call up,
I know nothing about the Chinese currency, but does the Chinese government not issue its own currency?
I have no idea. If they do, good luck to them. That's one thing that they'd be doing right. Yeah. But you never can tell. This is why, you know that great thing about 20 years ago where there was this big buzzword about interdependence? It's complete nonsense. Interdependence basically makes you prone to being manipulated by global markets. And hey-ho, who controls global markets? Why, it might be the central banking network out of Bale. It's all structured that way. I mean, you've got to remember as well, they've had advanced thinking on this way beyond the sort of knowledge that you and I are ever likely to see even now. They know about how populations respond to things. They're in it for the wrong reasons. They're in it from our point of view. I just think it's bizarre that we've got all this technological stuff and yet people are struggling like mad to meet bills. It doesn't make sense. And yet, it's very difficult to think about it outside of that framework because people are thinking all the time in monetary terms. Paddy, can you just stay there for a second? Because I have to play a little song because I said I would play one. I need to play a little thing. So we're just going to do that. If you want to hang on, and we'll do that. What did I want to play here? I'm just trying to get in the rhythm of doing sort of like 4 half-hour sections and seeing how it goes. So there we go. I'll tell you what this is afterwards. You might have heard this, but here we go. Oh, press the wrong button.
Something we got too much of. Try to find something new. Rivers and rainbows, God's creations out there waiting for you. Get up on your feet, get them to move, and take a holiday from the blues. Swim in the river, fly over the rainbow. What have you got to lose? Take a look around you. Don't let the world bring you down. Take a look at yourself. Let us smile, replace the frown. Take a
sad, then it's not the love you need. Love is supposed to make you happy. Go out and find the love you need. Get up on your feet, get them to move and move them on down the line. Let your love go for everybody. Don't you think it's about time? Take a look around you. Don't let the world bring you down. Take a look around you. Let us smile, replace the frown. Take a look around you. Don't let the world bring you down. Take a look around you. Let us smile, replace the frown. Take a look around you. Don't let the world bring you down. Take a look around you. Let us smile, replace the frown. Take a look around you.
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil and stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners, and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome back. I was a little bit late with that one. That should have occurred about 10 minutes ago. How about that? I'll get my timings better. I'm bumbling around with switches here, lads, so this is what happens. And a little comment there from Pale, actually, in the chat here on the studio side. Follow the money is the old adage. You're absolutely right. I think so anyway. And we are deliberately kept in the dark about this. This is true. So it's a communications challenge more than a technical one. I think that there are many, many ways for us to sort out these problems. I really do.
Yeah, the only reason I sort of spitballed that idea, as it were, is I was just sort of thinking of potential ways that the current global elite could potentially be weakened, and it seems to me that they get a lot of power from the dollar being the reserve currency, and if it were to change to, you know, the BRICS countries were to switch to another currency, I don't know what would happen to the power that they get from, you know,
they'll be behind that right now. They'll be behind that too. I remember I drone on about these things, but when I was sat down with the guy that sort of threw me into the whole dark world of banking with the knowledge stuff in the 90s, he talked about China then. This is 1996. And they move things around in a way that you can't see. This is they're very skilled at it. They think it's their role to do it. It's obviously become their role to do it. But we are kept in the dark. And it's this great mysterious thing. It's not taught in school. Is it? It's just not taught. If you go and do a degree course in economics, they spend about one day on central banking. They don't talk about the money creation process. I mean, this is really basic stuff. Now, someone's going to, maybe, I don't know, that was true maybe 10 years ago. Maybe they've upgraded it or whatever. But when you think about it, people's entire lives are structured around the acquisition of money to pay bills to deal with this thing and all the anxiety and stress that goes with that. There have been experiments where they've given people money to just get things paid off. I'm not championing an indolent society, and I actually suspect we wouldn't get one. I think people want to do things. You are defined by the projects, by the actions that you take in life very much. So the idea of just sitting around and drinking yourself into oblivion, unfortunately, I suppose there'll be a small percentage of people that would do that. But I don't trust any idea that they're in charge of. They will take hold of a good idea and change it. This universal credit thing, on one level, it harks back to social credit with Major Douglas back in the 1920s, that we have to get sufficient purchasing power into the hands of everybody. It's a great idea. It works, but not from them. Who are these people? Who are these people to say, well, we're going to do all this kind of stuff? We don't even know who they are, and they're hiding behind the government. The government, as I said, you know, it's like a good cop, bad cop thing. we're in charge of the economy, you can trust us. It's just an irrelevant statement. It's irrelevant. It's just completely stupid. And as I said, I think that the subtleties of it all, we're probably not in a position really to see it, because you and I have grown up like fish in sea. We've grown up using money that's interest-bearing debt money. So there's all sorts of habits and ways of viewing things that we've acquired to cope with that situation, understandably, you know. It's a great strength and weakness that we have. We're highly adaptable, which means we adapt to terrible things that we don't fix. Then we end up going wonky for a while. But you only have to look at the history of it, really, you know. 1694, they get the bank, and within inside 4 years, they'd issued £3 million more than existed. There was a run on the back. I mean, it's just, it's non-stop. You go, I don't think this is going to turn out too well. I don't think it's going to turn out. Paul, for you in the States.
One other.
I was just going to say, don't you want to own the Federal Reserve? You could call it something else if you like. I'm not really bothered what you call it, but I think Americans should own their own national bank.
Well, of course. Well, either Americans own their own national bank, or the American government, a legitimate government, owning the national bank. Who cares if it makes money? Because how little need would there be for taxes if the government was making the money that they needed to spend to conduct the government?
Mm-hmm.
And the monetary system, it's kept vague and obscure and secret and magic for a reason. So when one fails, they can bankrupt it, rename it, represent it as something brand new and better. But in the end, it's the same old thing that you had before. It's just they're calling it something different now.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that's going to happen. I mean, the dollar is a world reserve currency. Okay, what if the yuan becomes the world currency? It's still backed by the same globalists. They control every monetary system.
Yeah, they do.
And if they don't control one, they take it out, like what happened to Libya. Libya was a wealthy country with a happy people and a loyal people, loyal to their leader. Their leader lived in a tent and said that he would continue to live in a tent until every last one of his people had a house. That's how you run a country.
That's right.
But Libya didn't have the Libya didn't have the same army that China does, though.
No, this is true. This is true. But we don't know whether China are actually making their economy and putting it at the disposal of their own people. I mean, they've had different challenges. There's 1,500 million Chinamen. How many Indians are there now? 1,800 million? I'm not picking on them or anything. If they can sort their own, fantastic. Do whatever you like, right? But when we are told that there's a world population problem, I'm going, well, it's not too many Englishmen, is it? Seriously, I mean, is that a rough thing that I've said? Is that rough? Oh, no, we've got to be the first one that's go. I mean, people are sort of nuts, really. There's a little thing here on the CBDCs. We might as well just segue into this because I was going to bring this up. But the IMF chief says that central bank digital currency should be used alongside social credit systems to control what people can and cannot buy. Does he now? Or she? Fab. Another genius idea from our idiots in charge. But there's another little thing, which is this tweet or something. The Bank of International Settlements is on Twitter account or X account or whatever it is. Looks like it's Twitter. This is brief from Cecilia Skingsley, whoever she may be. Well done, Cecilia. Introducing a CBDC is not a universal solution. It has to come in a package with digital and financial literacy and identity, among other things. For that, public and private sectors have to work together. To which I would respond, bunk. Every single word in that sentence is nonsense. What? We're not looking for a universal solution to what? They're talking about a universal solution to their problem of controlling us. We don't need, there is no universal solutions to anything. It's completely, they're thinking, because they think globalist and think, oh, we're going to have this big system, you know, Klaus Schwab's great train set and all this kind of stuff, and everybody's got to be controlled. No one wants to live like this. No one's interested in their stupid, dumb ideas. They're like nerds. They're very, very bright. I accept all that. They're possibly, probably, the cream of the crop that were corrupted somewhere along the university line, have got drawn into this space and are in love with themselves and think that their intellect is the solution that we're all looking for. It isn't. We don't need it. I mean, you know, all this thing, again and again, the simple solutions are going to be lost to us if we almost like get absorbed, I think, in their complex structuring and language. There is a biblical solution to this. It's called the Year of the Jubilee. Every 50 years, every debt is scrapped. People go, we couldn't do that. Of course you could. Why couldn't you do it? I'd do it. If you put me in charge of England, I'd do it. You go, well, what about all these other countries? Well, we'll just change the currency and they'll just have to lump it. But then they'll blow us up. Okay, what do you want? You want to carry on as a slave forever? Are we going to make a stand and get this sorted out? We could sort it out. But you see, the problem, I suspect... Yeah, sorry, Paul. Please speak.
The problem with that is you don't have people owing you £50 million. If you were in a position to be owed £50 million, would you scrap debt? Would you just throw all that money away?
Yeah, I would if I would, because you see, it's different for you and me. If I look at what makes me happy, it ain't much. I'm a low-rent individual. I'm a very cheap gig. I just need tea. I need my bills paid. Seriously, I need tea. Right. I need my bills paid. I need to buy a new T-shirt every 2 years or something like that. And I need to be able to go for walks and stand in the sun and sing songs with my family. I mean, literally, these are the things that are important, the things that where life is. So what do I mean, look, maybe someone has earned 50 million quid. It's terrible. I've lost 50 million. No, you haven't. Because you're suddenly going to live in a place where all of this pressure and anxiety that's on so many people would disappear. I mean, that might be a problem, actually, if it disappeared overnight, right? They might go a bit loony. Okay, so you'd have to look at it. Because we're like drug addicts. We don't know that we are, but we are. I've got to get more money to pay that bill because the price has gone up next month. Your entire life is defined by having to do things that most people don't want to do. What's that thing? You find something that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Well, people have got things that they love, but they're never given enough time in life to find out what it is, half of them. That's the great tragedy of it. We don't need... that's my take on
but,
it.
But...
Yeah. Yeah.
But, okay, your needs are simple. I like to think my needs are simple. Mm-hmm. But if I were to truly put myself in their shoes, if I was an individual that ate... slept, dreamt, and breathed money.
Yeah. Well, there's so few of them, Paul, and that we'd just have to set up hospitals for them and we'd help them out. We'd have to help them out, wouldn't we?
It would be... Okay, no, I'm not saying we should let them keep their money. I'm not saying that the Jubilee is a bad idea. No, I think it's a good idea. But I don't know how we're going to talk them into it. It's like, okay, well, sorry, but we don't owe you any money anymore. So, and
you know, but you see, all the debts. If you're owed 50 million, I would suggest. I mean, there may be some unique cases where there's somebody who's just owed 50 million quid, for want of a better. But realistically, if you're owed 50 million, you're the sort of person that might be owing 30 or 40 million out elsewhere. I know it's asinine. There's no way me just saying this makes as if it is going to happen. I'm not stupid, but there's a reason why it's a biblical law, because it's a law and it works. And the orientation around making profit is mad. You see, the problem came when money has been productized. It's a thing now to people, but it isn't really that. It should really be thought of like a tape measure. You want to build a building? You better get a tape measure, otherwise you're going to have all your joists different lengths, and it's going to fall down. And that's like equivalent to the purchasing, a constant purchasing power of money. And this is how these guys discovered this. I mean, it's how Douglas discovered this big problem. You know, he's in charge of these massive engineering projects. He's measuring all these charts, and he sees that purchasing power is shifting around. How can you plan for that? Well, with great difficulty, generally. So now you've got large accounting and quantity surveying departments to estimate the price of things. And now you've got to participate in the markets because you don't know if you're going to be able to buy timber next month at the same price that you bought it 3 months ago. All this complexity comes into it to create all this busyness. And yet the quality of the buildings that get built these days is crap. It's crap. It's absolute crap. The quality of our culture is going down, right? Because the emphasis is on the wrong thing. I've got to make money. Why? All you can buy with it now is it's going to get junkier and junkier and junkier. Oh, you've got to have a new iPhone. That'll keep you distracted, I suppose, for 10 minutes or something. I'm slightly cynical, Paul. No, I've reached that middle-aged curmudgeon stage. I hope you've noticed.
All right.
I was just going to add one final point. Why is it they're switching to central bank digital currencies? Well, Bitcoin, they don't want to switch to that because, as you said, with the gold standard, they can't just print new money because it's actually tied to a physical commodity. Well, Bitcoin, it's basically tied to a virtual limitation whereby you can't mint new Bitcoin. So they wouldn't be able to just create new money. They'd have to actually have a limited amount of that. And I think they want to be able to just print as much as they want.
I think they want the flexibility and the elbow room to be able to start a new war whenever they feel like it, whenever it's required as part of the business plan, which is really what it's all about. The interesting thing with Bitcoin is there was a court case about 2014 in some New York court. I can't remember it. And it was against shutting down some exchange makers, big exchange makers at the time. And this is in the relatively early days of Bitcoin. So about 10 years ago. And at that point, the judge could have blown Bitcoin out of the water. People say, oh, you can't stop this. People are just mad. Of course they can stop it. It's the same thing like with cryptography, right? People go, well, I've got all these secret passwords and everything and all this, that, and the other. They'll never find out. That's how people think privacy works. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. If you've got something, there's a knock on your door and a bloke stands next to you, puts a gun to your head and he says, you give me all your passwords, and you give it to him. That's how it doesn't, when it gets to the really serious stuff, it goes into a different world altogether. And there are people, unfortunately, that operate like that. Now, just going back to Bitcoin, this judge could have blown it out of the water. He could have said, right, these exchange makers, I make it illegal for exchange makers to exist and handle this. That's it. It's finished. Because no one would have taken it, because the only reason they were taking it was to speculate, which is still the main reason to this day. And they needed to know that they've got an exchange out into the US dollar. You deny them that, it's useless. Who actually buys and sells real things in the real world for Bitcoin even now? No one. My take on it is there was no Japanese guy called Satoshi Underpants or whatever his name was. It's complete crap. As usual, it's the CIA up to their usual, well, let's come up with an interesting story to keep people looking in the wrong direction. And it worked, you know. There's this genius Japanese kid who's yawn. Who cares, right? What they were doing is Bitcoin was a trial balloon to see how it would really operate. It's just it's an experimental testbed. CBDCs was always the thing. But somehow it's the central bank, so we can really believe in it. No, we can't. It's just run by a bunch of thieves, like it has been for the last 300 years. And it's getting people, I think...
The central bank is the problem.
Yeah, it's getting people to think in this slightly aggressive way that I'm expressing now. This disrespectful way towards them. Hey, look, my timer works. That's the end of the show music. Paddy, thank you for... turning up and questions. Paul, yeah, sorry, say something, yeah?
If I could make a quick comment, use 60 seconds. Inflation was not a problem from the early days of the pioneers in the U.S. all the way up to the 50s. Okay, inflation wasn't a problem. What happened that took an $11,000 house to $250,000 in a matter of 50 years was central banking. Banking for profit, fractional banking. That's what happened. The rich getting richer and the people having more and more taxes to pay.
It's true. There's Paul, you're absolutely right. Spot on. We can carry on with this for quite a while and we probably will. Paul, Paddy and Pale, thank you very much for calling in. Thanks for being with us, listeners, for the last couple of hours. I'll be back here same time next week at 8 p.m. UK, 3 p.m. Eastern. Till then, have a good week. God bless. Be safe and look forward to speaking to you all in a week's time. Bye for now.